In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
If you're following the news at all, you've almost certainly seen a blizzard of bad financial headlines. The U.S. stock market is off to its worst start of the year ever. European stock markets are teetering, and there's a run on gold. A headline in the U.K. Telegraph this last week said, "The world cannot afford another financial crash. It could destroy capitalism as we know it." The article says society is still too fragile, fiscally and psychologically, from the last recession. Another collapse, it warns, especially if it included another taxpayer bailout, could trigger a cataclysmic, uncontrollable backlash. That the public's anger would be so explosive, so all-encompassing, that it would threaten the very survival of free trade and of the market-based economy. Most telling from that article is this, quote, "The sorry truth is that there is very little governments can do at this stage apart from battening down the hatches and hoping that central banks succeed in kicking our problems even further down the road. There's hope and change for you. Our economic policies have been reduced to hope. We are witnessing the culmination of what happens when uninformed voters put inexperienced people into office, people whose real-world experience is what they heard or read in college, not people who have ever run a business. People who don't know what they're doing, who then appoint other people who don't know what they're doing. The latest example of we don't have a clue what we're doing is negative interest rates, which central banks in Europe are using and which the Fed here in the U.S. is considering. We'll talk about that with our guest, Kevin Freeman. Kevin has been with us before to talk about the very real war going on right now. China and Russia, ISIS and others are all waging war on our markets and our market system and on our society. And right in the middle of all this, there was another headline last week you might have missed. The Chicago Stock Exchange was sold to a Chinese company, a sale that is fully anticipated to be approved by the brilliant strategic thinkers over at the FEC later this year. What is going on in the strategic international battlefield of economics and finance? Are we about to see 2008 repeat itself? I'd like to welcome now Kevin Freeman. He literally wrote the book on economic warfare. His first book was Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And his latest book is Game Plan, in which he outlines the potential threats against our economy and how Americans can be prepared to protect their savings and investments. Kevin, it's good to talk to you.
Great. It's good to talk with you.
It is not looking all that particularly great for the economy this year so far. We've had a lot of major sell-offs in the U.S. stock market, certainly all across some of the global stock markets as well. I'd like to start, though, with some review. From your blog, you said that in January of 2009, you were hired by a group inside the Pentagon to, quote, "research and explain the role that economic warfare may have played in the stock market crash underway at that time, in part because how the stock market crash in 2008 played a key role in the U.S. presidential election." So what were some of your findings from that initial research? Was there evidence of attacks by foreign interests?
Oh, there's no doubt there were attacks by foreign interests in the 2008 crash. It was reluctantly admitted by Hank Paulson in a BBC interview where they picked up on something he'd mentioned in his memoirs. And essentially, in the summer of 2008, the Russian government approached the Chinese government and said, "Let's attack Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac using financial weapons of mass destruction," meaning dumping their stock or manipulating in the markets, with the idea that this will cripple America and put them in desperate financial straits. And There's no doubt that happened. The Chinese even admitted to us that the Russians were trying to do that.
And I seem to recall that was all blamed on some $40 million investor over in the UK somewhere. So why did they go with that particular spin on things?
Well, now that was actually the $40 million investor was actually the flash crash of 2010, which was one of them threw us into the worst recession since the Great Depression, and has global economies scrambled, and literally bank after bank went out of business. The one in 2010 happened in early May, and it was a complete shock because people were sitting at their desks, and all of a sudden the Dow was down 1,000 points with no noticeable cause explanation whatsoever. That's the one they blamed on the London trader who had about $40 million.
Okay, and so what kind of role did this attack play in our presidential election of 2008? Because I certainly remember McCain suspending his campaign at the time, and I thought that was a horrible mistake. It made him look kind of weak. And is the thought that this helped get President Obama elected?
Well, that's not just my thought, and I believe that because on September 11th, 2008, John McCain and Sarah Palin were leading Barack Obama and Joe Biden in the polls, and not by a small margin. It was by a reasonable margin. And after Lehman Brothers collapsed and all of the financial crisis that took place the week of September 11th, after that point, it wasn't even close the other direction. Obama won. And it wasn't just my opinion. Joe Biden has literally come out in public and said exactly that. If it were not for the financial collapse, Barack Obama would not have been elected president.
You say in your blog that the new president, meaning Obama, did nothing to further investigate the security. To me, that indicates that he was perfectly okay with what happened, obviously, because he got elected. But does that mean that the Russians and Chinese who instigated this attack, does that mean he was their guy that they wanted in there?
I don't know if that's a valid conclusion or not. I could see why someone would get there. And a lot of people have said, well, maybe George Soros crashed the market because he wanted to see Obama elected. But I can tell you this. Instead of investigating and looking at what happened, the Obama administration went to great lengths to make certain that there was no one looking backwards at financial terrorism or aspects. And the best explanation I received came from a three-star general inside the Defense Intelligence Agency at the time. He closed his doors and he said, Kevin, this doesn't fit the administration's narrative. They won't want to talk about this because it looks like that someone crashed the market to get Obama elected, and so they'll just try and cover it up. I didn't hear the words doesn't fit the narrative again until the Benghazi incident when everything was blamed on a YouTube video.
Interesting. Well, have there been any attacks by those Russian or Chinese interests since? Because if we look at it from the other side, they certainly seem to be happy with the result, whether or not Obama was complicit in it.
Well, there have been continuing attacks. Newsweek reported, I think it was in 2010 or 11, something that the FBI had called me in and asked me about, which was they found a digital bomb. That was the term that was used in Newsweek and CNN and other places, in the NASDAQ placed there by Russian interests. There is no doubt that Russia, China, and other entities around the world have attempted to infiltrate into our stock market to create a weapon, financial weapon of mass destruction, that they could push the button and cause our stock market to collapse. This is a part of Chinese military doctrine dating back to 1999, and I believe that they're looking for any possibility, any new way, to get closer to our markets to where they could shut them down or cause them to go crazy, and the net result would be a collapse of the United States.
Wow. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break right there. Lots more with Kevin Freeman. He is the author of Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And his latest book is Game Plan. Coming up, we're going to be talking about some of the methods that are used to do all this. Stay with us. And thanks for staying with us on the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today about economic warfare. The markets are very much in turmoil, and this certainly plays along with last week's show talking about socialism. To do all that, we're talking with Kevin Freeman. His book is Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And his latest book is Game Plan. In the last segment, we were talking about the Chinese and Russian interests that had actually attacked our stock market. I guess this always brings up the question is, why would the Chinese, when we are their biggest customers, why would they want to bring down our economy?
You know, that is probably the most often asked question that I receive. because it goes to something called Western bias. It's something where people assume that everyone else's intention is to live life as they live and to maximize their profits, to grow their economy, live in the Western system. Unfortunately, Western bias would tell us that no one would strap a bomb onto a child and send them into a crowded marketplace as a suicide bomber.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, sadly, we know that it happens. The Chinese don't have a desire to win the game and be the strongest Western financial system player. They want to replace the United States, upend the board, and dominate from a completely different paradigm. And so as a result, we assume all they want to do is participate in our economy and grow and, you know, like anybody else. That's a dangerous assumption, and one which Michael Pillsbury, who is probably closer to China than any analyst of the past 30 years, he wrote about it. This is his book, The 100-Year Marathon, and this is his mea culpa. He readily admits, as a key influencer of U.S. government policy toward China for the past four decades, he had long been one of many in the federal government pushing the U.S. toward full cooperation with China, including heavy financial and technological support, under the belief that the country was headed in a more democratic, free market direction. Hmm. Looking back, it was painful that I was so gullible. He's learned that China is literally trying to dominate the world. It's a part of a long-term 100-year plan, and they don't think in terms of the next quarter or the next year. They think in 5 years, 10 years, and 100-year increments. And their intention, plainly laid out in a lot of their writings, is to displace America as the leader of the world.
Mm. One of the things that you mentioned in the last segment there was this digital bomb that had been placed in a NASDAQ. What exactly does that entail?
Well, it essentially was a latent computer program that, when the circumstances were right, could have been affected, that would have caused either the market to melt down or could have caused legitimate players placing orders to think that they were buying something when they were in actuality selling, or even worse, could have caused high-frequency program traders that don't have any human intervention and account for about 70% of stock market activity to go haywire, and no one would know what caused it.
Hmm. Well, let's say that something like that went off. What's the remedy for that? Do they have, like, I know it's an absurd question, but do they have some sort of backup where they can say, okay, at this moment in time, these people own these stocks, these people own those stocks, these people were selling those stocks, and so on and so forth? Or, I mean, does it just totally destroy all of that? I mean, how would they ever unwind something like that if it were to go off?
It depends. If it's done in a very limited way, we have unwound things where there were trades that were ridiculous. For example, in the flash crash, where legitimate companies were selling for a penny a share, and they went back and corrected those trades so that the buyer didn't get a penny, didn't get the securities for a penny a share, and the seller didn't sell at a penny a share. So they have done corrections on it. But if this were done on a widespread basis, it would create mass chaos, and the lawsuits alone would bankrupt America.
Wow, wow. All of this is coming through the stock exchanges, and it seems like this is, you know, from a strategic standpoint, if I was looking at this from the outside in, that would certainly be a point of vulnerability that I would want to attack. Are these the types of attacks that we would likely be to see in the future, these kinds of purely electronic attacks, or are there other means that they could go in there and disrupt the stock exchanges?
Well, there are other means. The electronic is probably the most sophisticated, the most modern, but as I wrote in the book Secret Weapon, they could legitimately place orders that they had no intention of filling, and create sufficient panic selling stock that they didn't own and they never delivered. But if they sold enough of it, it's called naked short selling, they sold enough of it, people would panic and think this company is not going to make it, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy at some level, to where the company is literally out of business and you never have to show up with the shares to deliver them. And that's, in fact, what happened with Lehman Brothers back in 2008. 100 million shares of stock were sold, for which there wasn't a share. Those were all fake orders.
Wow. And that's an important point. You've mentioned this a couple times here about almost, what did you say, 70% of all of the trades happen electronically. There's almost no intervention. So are those just automated trades where a computer program is set up, says if this stock hits this certain point, we either buy or sell, that sort of thing? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, yes, but it's actually even more complicated than that. In 2013, I think it was, the Syrian Electronic Army took over the Associated Press Twitter feed and put out a fake tweet that says the White House has been damaged, the president is hurt. And the high-frequency trading programs saw that information and said they already had built in, if the White House is ever attacked, sell stocks. And so there was a $200 billion approximately decline in the Dow Jones Industrial Average based on a fake tweet from a hacking of the Associated Press by the Syrian Electronic Army. Now, it all recovered because it was obvious the White House had not been hit, the president was fine, and so everybody that had sold went back and bought, and it was just a short-term blip. But that gives you an idea that high-frequency trading program algorithms are not just looking at price activity on the stock exchange. They look at the price of oil, and they look beyond that, who gets elected in certain areas, if there's riots in the streets in Paris, if there's a terror attack. All of them are geared to sell or buy based on information that they see in the traditional news feed.
Wow. Stunning stuff. It is really amazing that so much of our economy runs on the back of some mathematical model. All right, lots more to talk about with Kevin Freeman coming up. We're going to be talking about how the Chinese have been attacking the U.S., and we'll talk about that purchase of the Chicago Stock Exchange by a Chinese company. Stay with us. And we're back. You're listening to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Kevin Freeman about the topic of economic warfare and financial terrorism. Kevin has consulted for and briefed members of both the U.S. House and Senate, both present and past. He has also consulted for the CIA, DIA, FBI, SEC, Homeland Security, Justice Department, as well as local and state law enforcement. His webpage, if you'd like to go visit that, is globaleconomicwarfare.com. I got a couple of books up there, too, and we'll link all of this up on iSpyRadio.com. Just look for today's show page. It is 6-07. We've been talking about the crashes here in the stock market, what happened back in 2008, and now with all of the economic news that's out there, it is just not looking good. 2016 looks like another down year, and gee, it just happens to be in the middle of a presidential election year again. Making the news of late, and what actually led us to you again, is this notion that the Chicago Stock Exchange was just sold to a Chinese firm. So we're talking about market manipulation. Is this the sale of a U.S. stock exchange to the Chinese? Does that represent a strategic danger?
Absolutely, it does. In fact, let me point out that the Director of National Intelligence, General James Clapper, testified before the Senate on February 9th, and he talks about the increased reliance on artificial intelligence for autonomous decision-making is creating new vulnerabilities to cyber attacks and influence operations. And he talks about significant fluctuations in the stock market and the risk that those pose. Now let's back up to the House committee that looked in 2011, as reported in Barron's, and they talked about the flash crash. They brought everybody in and they said, could somebody crash our stock market through this mechanism? And they said foreigners theoretically could gain naked access to an exchange through the sponsorship of a brokerage firm. And it goes on and talks about how dangerous that is. And the closer you get to an exchange, the more dangerous it becomes. So a brokerage firm ownership by a foreign entity would be very dangerous. Well, they just skipped that step entirely. They don't need the brokerage firm. They've now are purchasing a stock exchange. It's not one of the larger exchanges, but it doesn't matter. It gives them access.
Right.
Once they have that access point, absolutely they can begin to manipulate markets.
Yeah, it is actually one of the smallest. I want to say it's like the fifth smallest or something like that. It's not a huge one. But why did they choose this particular stock exchange? I mean, was it simply the right price at the right time type of thing?
I would think I think it was just available. You also have to add to the fact that it's in Chicago, and Chicago trading controls a huge portion of everything that goes on in the world. New York is a massive trading center for equities, but Chicago has a lot of the futures and commodities markets,
yes,
it's a big access point.
Well, why on earth, you know, when we're talking about these vulnerabilities and whatnot, why on earth is a stock exchange in the U.S., how is that not a protected strategic asset? I mean, it does have to be approved by the SEC, but do you envision the SEC saying, no, this isn't going to happen?
No, because the SEC approved Alibaba, the largest IPO in the history of the United States. We IPO'd a Chinese company, and in my opinion, every Chinese company, listed Chinese company, that allows someone like Jack Ma to reach the position of power that he has is some way tied to the People's Liberation Army or to the Chinese Communist Party government. And we allowed them to IPO when Hong Kong, which is ostensibly controlled by China, Hong Kong rejected the IPO, the initial public offering of Alibaba. They said it doesn't meet their security standards. They have certain standards. We had a recommendation from a House committee that said we should not approve that, and it was approved anyway. I actually went to the press club in Washington, wrote some papers on this, on the danger that it might pose by allowing them to raise $25 billion in the American market. Taking over a stock exchange is much, much, much worse. But if we would allow them to IPO and take $25 billion of our money, and there was, oh, no, China, they're benign. They're just trying to build up their economy. That is that same bias that has caused us to really put ourselves at risk multiple different ways.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the reverse there, is that true? Do any U.S. companies own any Chinese stock exchanges or any stock exchanges in other foreign markets?
No, the stock exchange, well, I don't know about other foreign markets, but in China, they're tightly controlled. The United States does not, no American citizens that I'm aware of own stock exchanges. No American companies own the stock exchange in China or any other area that might be a risk to them. So it's an unusual circumstance.
Well, from what I'm hearing you say, where we've had these other attacks in the past by the Russians and the Chinese, and the entrance point was the stock exchange, and here we are selling now to a Chinese-owned firm. Pardon the pun here, but why is this not running up huge red flags for people?
Well, it's the nature of the openness of our society. I have a copy of a book, Unrestricted Warfare. It's written by two colonels of the senior colonels of the People's Liberation Army in 1999, and it says very plainly a single man-made stock market crash is a new concept weapon. And it talks about how that's an entry point. You first amass a great deal of capital, then you launch a sneak attack against financial markets, then you bury computer virus and hacker detachments, then you attack the civilian electricity grid, the financial transaction grid, the traffic dispatching network. And the goal is to cause the enemy nation to fall into street riots, panic, and a political crisis. And essentially, that's the model for winning, and the first step is to have access to the stock exchange. But we're such an open society, you know, there are restrictions on what we can do in Saudi Arabia. There, you know, you have to dress a certain way, you can't, yes. You can't do and so we allow, but we allow those that come from Saudi Arabia to enjoy all the freedoms of the United States. That's the nature of our open society.
Well, I hate to say it, but I kind of agree with Trump on this one, is we are being led by stupid people, because that little bit that you just read now by those colonels, it's not only the model, it certainly sounds like that's where we are right now.
There's no doubt in my mind they've been working towards this. And again, Mike Pillsbury, he's someone I know and I've talked to and I respect a great deal. For 40 years, he was in Washington selling them on the benign rise of China. I was called into the Defense Intelligence. And by the way, he's come to the right side of this. He's written his fabulous book, 100-Year Marathon. I was in the Defense Intelligence Agency, General Mike Flynn, who recently said that Hillary Clinton ought to bow out of the presidential race because of what she's done compromising national security with her servers. I mean, he's out on that now. He invited me to come in, and I said, General Flynn, why would you have an investment manager from Texas come in and talk about China? He said, basically, because all of the people there have all bought into the idea that China's our friend.
Wow.
And he needed an outside view to come in and shake things up.
Wow. Oh, boy. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break right here. We're running a little bit long. Lots more with Kevin Freeman on economic terrorism. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show, talking today about economic warfare and financial terrorism with Kevin Freeman. He has been a consultant for both the U.S. House and Senate, present and past. He's consulted with CIA, DIA, FBI, SEC, and a whole bunch of other three-letter acronyms. And he has literally wrote the book on economic warfare, Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And his latest book is Game Plan. And we'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. And so, Kevin, we were talking about the sale of the Chicago Exchange to a Chinese-owned firm and the huge amount of vulnerability that this places on us. And as I was doing some research for this week's show, I was reading about the Chicago Exchange itself, and one of the things that they're touting right now as to why it's a competitive advantage to list with them or to do business with them is they call it their snap auction. And I'm just going to read this. It's off of their website. Quote, when you place your start snap auction orders, Chicago Exchange initiates a sub-second auction conducted entirely in the dark. Designed with minimal information leakage and low exchange fees, a snap auction offers a fair playing field to everyone involved. And, you know, when I read that, I'm thinking, I don't like the idea that they're moving this entirely into the dark where you can't see what's happening. Is that a matter of concern for people?
It's a huge concern. When you move everything to the dark, then you lose the ability to find out who's doing what, and you lose the accountability that would be responsible from it. This is something the SEC has supported. I talked to the Inspector General of the SEC a few years ago, and I said, you guys, if everybody has the intention of making a buck and this is a good, fair, legal system, then great. It can be done in the dark and nobody's harmed. But a lot of things bad happen in the dark. Dark pools were a big part of what happened in 2008, and we still to this day cannot trace exactly who was pulling the trigger and why they were doing it.
Well, explain to our audience exactly what a dark pool is.
It's the ability to exchange without having a paper trail or electronic trail, where a group of you know, imagine if you shut the lights off and you had whispers in a room. I'll give you $50 for that or $100 for its ability to obscure who is actually making the bid to purchase or to sell. Which is fine. I can see that, you know, in a fair system where everybody has the same motive of making a profit, it might be beneficial. But we don't live in a fair world.
No.
Not everyone has the purpose of just making a profit. Some people have malintentions with their activity.
Well, and some of this, as far as trying to move it into the dark like that, isn't that a response to where you've got these programs that watch these the share prices being sold and whatnot? And so if they're able to get their buy or sell orders in even a few split seconds before somebody else can get it, isn't there millions to be made on that if you're making a large enough trade?
There's a lot of money that's made from the ability to be closer to the exchange. The problem is when you get into essentially spoofing or front running, which is what they accuse that London trader of doing, you know, to where you blitzkrieg the market with orders that you never have any intention of filling,
right,
and thus you move the price because the price just continues to follow the order. Then it's put in and withdrawn before you can even notice it. But the trading programs notice it, and they follow that around, and that eventually ends up setting the price when no one individual actually was buying or selling anything.
Well, so in theory, by the Chicago Exchange moving things into the dark, it would be a hedge against that, where you've got these programs trying to game the system like that. So I can kind of understand where they're coming from on that in terms of leveling the playing field and all. But, you know, it used to be that there were no computer programs. Traders would be down in the pit and they'd be shouting out their orders from one to the other. So it wasn't like things weren't transparent. I mean, it just bothers me that so much of this is happening where you can't ever possibly trace any of this in the darkness.
Well, there's 2 points. Number one is actually the dark pools give opportunities for manipulation just in different ways. But the second point is when you had reasonable people that were traders that were shouting in the pits and they saw something cataclysmic happening rather than an absolute rule, which is what we live under, rules-based, where you got to stop here and do this, they actually have preserved the market and prevented collapses multiple times. They would step in and they would buy. high. See, the problem with high-frequency trading algorithms is they only provide liquidity when it's beneficial to them. When they want to step out, there's no one to be found there. Well, a market maker, a human being, a person, sees Accenture trading, if it were at $100 and it went down to a penny, they would have never let it get to a penny.
Yeah.
They would have stepped in and bought at 90 or 80 or 70 or 60 or 50 or 40, and they'd have made a lot of money doing that, taken a lot of risk doing it, added a lot of liquidity to the markets. It would have been beneficial all the way around.
Wow. You know, it'd be nice to get back to that system. I don't know that we could ever possibly get back to that because the trading orders are so huge now. And is there any talk in the strategic centers that maybe we should be getting back to that kind of system?
No, I don't think you ever go back that direction, although a huge percentage of those trading orders wouldn't exist if we had a human-based system.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, it's one of those, but I don't think we'll ever go back there again.
Well, is the solution, though, to take it out of these dark pools, like you say, where like the Chicago Exchange is doing, where they dump the buy and the sell orders into the dark? I mean, is that a way around that, is to make it more transparent, make it more open?
I think that'd be part of it, and part of it would be if you place an order, you have to leave the order live for a reasonable period. You could mandate that it stays live for a second or something that was reasonable. You know, and just something as simple as what we used to have called the uptick rule. You know, one of our concerns is that people will just rapid-fire sell stocks down until they collapse. One of the old rules was you couldn't sell short a share of stock unless the last tick on it had been higher, not lower. So it put its own natural braking system in to the decline. And that was in place, amazingly enough, until the year 2007.
Mm.
And from the Great Depression, Joe Kennedy put that rule in when he took over the SEC in the 1930s. He said, this is the way to stop this, and it stayed in place until the year 2007. And when we removed it, since that point, that's when we've seen all this chaos.
Wow. Wow. All right. Let's go take a break right there. We're going to still have to talk about oil and gold and whether or not history is going to be repeating itself. Stay with us. Lots more with Kevin Freeman. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show, talking today about economic warfare and financial terrorism. Doing that with Kevin Freeman. He is the author of Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. His latest book is Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. You know, the subtitle of that book sounds like you're pretty sure that this is going to happen again.
Well, there's no doubt that there will be an attempted attack. It is inevitable. It's the history of mankind. War, you know, the word end all wars didn't end war, did it?
No, it certainly did not. So in the news of this week, has gold, Drudge Report had several leading articles about gold and the run on gold. And prior to that, we had the price of oil dropping. You know, we had talked in the first segment there about the bias between Western bias and normal bias and how that we can't assume that just because we're China's biggest customer that we can assume that they're out looking for our best interests. You've got another situation here where the Saudis seem to be more than happy to let the oil price tank in order to drive out U.S. producers. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the Saudis told us that's what they were going to do, and they get a threefer. They attack Iran, they attack Russia, and they attack the U.S. shale industry all at the same time by lowering the price of oil. That's pure and simple economic warfare. If it were any other goods, it'd be called dumping. If these were manufactured goods, whenever you dump the price of a product that you produce below the cost of production of the nation in which you're selling, you would have violated trade laws. But in the oil markets, we don't have those laws, and so essentially they are attempting to drive out American energy independence.
Well, isn't any market really susceptible to manipulation if there's a big enough player in it that is willing to take losses? I mean, if a billionaire or a group of them is willing to eat losses in order to drive out competition, I mean, what are the mechanisms that can stop them?
Well, the smart thing to do is not what we're doing. The smart thing to do is if they're selling oil below the cost of production, $26 a barrel or something now, we ought to be in buying it. We're now able to borrow, you know, and I'm opposed to adding anything to the federal debt unless it's assets that are being bought well below their cost of production. But if we can borrow money on a 10-year basis at 1.75%, we ought to be adding to our strategic petroleum reserve like crazy, building facilities, which is infrastructure. Everybody should like that. So we build facilities to store, capture and store oil and buy as much of it as we can with 1.75% or whatever the current 10-year rate is because it keeps dropping. We've got to buy as much of that as we can until the Saudis say, whoa, we've got to stop this. And that's how you break that sort of activity. But what are we doing instead? Actually, Congress, in their infinite wisdom, has voted to sell oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as oil is hitting multi-decade lows.
Oh, my word. Yeah, well, like I said earlier, and like Trump has been saying, is we're being led by stupid people. The other big item in the news right now is that gold is starting to jump in price. There's a lot of turmoil in the market. There was one article out of the UK that said investors are very shaken by the U.S. economy and the global economy, and it reported that February 9th, just a couple days ago, saw the most money flow into gold bullion securities, which is a gold tracking fund, since January of 2009. So more than six years ago, investors in one day poured in £239 million, and that is the equivalent U.S. of $345 million. So, what are your thoughts? Is this run on gold? Is this an indicator that people are finally had it with the smart people in the room? And as far as the economies are going, what does this bode for the future?
Gold serves multiple purposes. One of them, it's a hedge against disaster. And so, yes, I think people are panicking to a certain degree and say, what can I own? Stock market's going down. You know, I don't trust sovereign governments. I don't trust bonds. I don't trust paper money. There are $7 trillion in the world that's invested in bonds with negative interest rates. That means you pay the people to borrow your money. And that's the new thing. The Japanese just announced it this past week that they're going to have negative interest rates. Well, one of the reasons you wouldn't hold gold is because you could take your money and you could put it in the bank and you could get an interest rate return on it. If you don't want to hold gold because it costs something to store it and to keep it and it's not really easy to use and so forth. But if there are negative interest rates, doesn't gold make more sense? The cost of storage is eliminated because you have to pay people to store your bills as well, your cash. So gold becomes marginally more attractive. Now, gold is well off its highs of earlier this decade. It was almost $1,800 an ounce, and there was a real rush to gold. Now it is in the 1,200 range, so it's literally a third off of its highs. But it will continue to be, it's the longest standing monetary asset. It is something that people see as valuable, and it's something that, you know, frankly, portfolios ought to consider having a portion in gold as a hedge or as a monetary instrument.
Yeah. You know, I've got a rather large question, and I think we're going to go ahead and take a break a little early here, because coming up, I'd like to talk about whether or not history is repeating itself. Everyone stay with us. We'll have lots more with Kevin Freeman talking about economic and financial warfare. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Kevin Freeman talking about economic warfare and financial terrorism. Got a couple of books out there that you ought to go check out, Secret Weapon and also Game Plan, and we'll link those up on iSpyRadio.com. And, you know, we're talking about this notion of negative interest, which is just shocking. I can't ever remember this concept. I've been following the markets and stuff since high school because, you know, it was part of one of our classes. We had to do that. But I never recall hearing about a negative interest rate. I mean, isn't this essentially basically designed to drive people and banks, force them in to go invest in markets?
It's designed to get money moving in the economy. It's designed to get people, instead of putting their money in the bank, that they would take it out and they would actually literally invest it somewhere, either in the markets or in construction or in research and development or pay salaries or whatever. But people have been hoarding money, and despite the fact that global governments around the world, central banks have been pumping money out like crazy, it's mostly gone into deposits and into sovereign bonds.
Yeah.
And so governments have said, we'll just charge people.
Well, in the
instead of paying them.
Yeah. Well, and the sovereign bonds themselves are in a world of hurt because so many of them had invested heavily in oil. But, you know, this negative interest rate where you're forcing people into the market, as it is, a 0% or barely above zero, which is what your bank account is going to pay, you're already losing money simply through inflation. But here you're actively shoving people into the marketplace. It seems to me this is a hugely desperate move by policymakers. It's like they've thrown up their hands and they're just saying, you know, we don't have a clue what we're doing.
And yet, Fed Chairman Yellen said, we're open to that in recent congressional testimony. We may be there. Japan is there. Certain nations of Europe are there. And we may be there.
Yeah. So we've only got about 5 minutes here or so with you. And I want to start talking about, actually 4 minutes. I want to start talking about whether or not history can repeat itself. And on your website, and we'll link this up on iSpyRadio.com under the title of History, Will History Repeat Itself? You've got a list here of things about what was happening in 2008 versus today. And I'm just going to read through some of these. Oil prices collapsed in 2008 and today. Banks were stressed in 2008 and today. Credit markets were stressed in 2008 and today. The stock market had been rising for 5 to 6 years from 2002 to 2007 and also from 2009 to 2015. George Soros was active in 2008 and is active again today. Dark pools were at work in 2008 and also today, which we've already covered. Sovereign wealth funds selling, was a contributor in 2008 and also today. There was a bursting housing bubble in 2008. Globally, there may be one today. There was a serious $1 trillion debt problem in 2008 through the housing market, and there is one today through student loans. We were in a non-incumbent presidential election year then and now. In both cases, the economy had recovered from initial weakness during the president's first term, but appeared to be rolling over. And I think that's the part that I would really like to talk about, and there's more there. Just scary stuff in terms of just a total repeat of history. So in terms of the non-incumbent presidential election year, let's look at the obvious connection here, I think, which is Hillary. And you've got some – we've talked about the influence of foreign markets and foreign entities on our stock markets. The Hillary Clinton Foundation, I mean, that is rife with foreign markets. So, again, are we not seeing a potential replay of last go-around?
You know, I saw an amazing statistic that showed issues before the Clinton State Department and donations made to the Clinton Foundation. And we would never allow political donations. In fact, the law would disallow political donations from the same entities that had issues before an agency of the government that someone controlled. Yet, the donations that have gone in to the foundation have been huge, and they seem directly connected. So it really is frightening, the amount of foreign money in politics and influencing our government. That's why we've had this bias towards China, by the way. The amount of Chinese money floating around Washington, D.C. is extraordinary. So it is very frightening.
And it is not just the U.S. for sure. There was another really fascinating article. It says, this is from the U.K. Telegraph, says the world cannot afford another financial crash. And again, this is not just the U.S. This is globally that we're looking at a lot of this. I thought all these smart people were supposed to fix things in 2007, 2008. We almost seem to be worse off than ever before.
Well, the derivative exposure is greater. Our federal debt, which was around $10 trillion when George Bush left office and Barack Obama entered, is now $20 trillion almost. We're over 19 and headed towards 20 by the time he leaves office. The Federal Reserve can't lower interest rates without going to negative interest rates. They can't lower much further. You know, so the bottom line is we shot our bullets in trying to fix this. We attempted to fix it with huge federal spending and with very lax monetary policy. Yeah. The problem is we added regulation.
Yeah.
And we threw so much regulation that the economy is now moribund. We can't move and grow as we should.
No, absolutely not. Kevin, unfortunately, we're up against the clock here. I want to thank you so much for your time today. And unfortunately, things are looking bleak, but we will definitely have to have you back, especially in terms of what people can be doing to protect themselves. In the meantime, I want to direct people to your blog because you do have a lot of good information up there for people.
The globaleconomicwarfare.com or secretweapon.org.
All right, great. Kevin, again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. That UK Telegraph article I mentioned at the top of the show suggested that if there's another crash, people will call for wage and price controls and punitive ultra-progressive taxes. And that's what's hanging in the balance here. Will people be so angry that they embrace even more government control, the policies that got us here, or will they say, enough of this, it is time to get someone into office who knows what they're doing? Frankly, whether we're under attack or if this is just a matter of Gilligan at the helm of the USS economy, the effect is the same. And it's time for change. Real change. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.